We only realized it in silence. It was ticking all the time when I was talking and Eris was saying, and all, you know, all every day, whatever we do, the clock keeps ticking. And only when we're silent, we realize that it's been ticking. So when we are silent in ourselves, we should realize, not only realize that, we should realize that we've been ticking all the time. Unconsciously, maybe, but all the time his remembrance is there. Jai Baba.
The man, subordinate to man, status is being raised. Baba seemed to have given them a special pedestal to be higher than the men, it seemed. To us, it seemed. There was a constant struggle with the men and women. Not with the women, we don't know the women's side, but men felt that way. At least I personally felt it that way. Why? Why should they have plates and why should we have just platters? Why should they have glasses to drink water from and we have old used tin pots? But that was a lot. Why should they have the first preference? Why their bedding should be on the top of us all and ours should be crushed, and why they should be kept spacious? All this was there. This was our whys and wherefores. We never inquired about the metaphysics of spirituality. Why is this and why is that? But why the women are giving more preference than the men? Yeah, it was common.
And you did notice they didn't talk about it.
Sometimes we blurt out. And this Baba said they deserve it.
But the women had to experience more separation from
Baba. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, that was suffering, obviously. So, you know.
But, Eric, you got to be with them all the time.
Yeah.
Who said that?
I mean, it appears to me that you
not
were with
Baba
all the
time. Men had that privilege.
Yeah, but you were a lot, too.
I also had my good share, lion's share I had. No doubt about it. Yeah. So what?
So that was maybe why.
No, I don't know why, but I mean...
But just to hear these taunts, you see, if you were to love me like the women love, you wouldn't have to bother with such things and wouldn't suffer, wouldn't have lose your mood and all. All the time to hear about women
from
him.
Baba?
Yeah.
Then there's the reverse of the coin, though.
That's great, I didn't know that.
Huh?
I never knew that.
Yeah. So often he would... not often, means not frequently, but so often he would say that if you were only to know to love me as the women love, then all this wouldn't be there. Obedience would be so easy, everything would be so simple. If you were to know to love me the way the women love, it would go. You know, once we can bear it, twice, possible. Three times, a lot. Fourth time, blurt out. Then I blurted out, I said, what is this? If you want to taste the love of men, come once in the form of a woman as the avatar. Then you will taste the love of men. This is how we would respond to such things. Not we would, but I responded. This is, no, that cannot be possible. It is so ordained that I will always come in your midst as man amongst men. But it always was a thorn in my mind and in my heart. What the heck, this woman knew how to love him, and all the time he would use that as an example and all that. So after Baba passed away, I put this question to the women, when the women started coming and mingling with us. I said, they would ask us certain things, the same thing they asked us at that time, what happened with the clothes that were, you know, those dirty clothes that we sank in the ocean, full of filthy clothes. So I just bundled that and threw it in the bathroom there and came running with the fresh girls. They did not know what sort of a musk was contacted that Baba got so soiled, you see, his clothes were so soiled. What's the matter? What has happened? How could that be? It had never happened before, such a thing. And it was a mystery to them. They didn't have the daring to ask Baba, why, what's all this? Whosoever washed the clothes, they just demonstrated before the other women. So we don't know. They didn't ask. So then I told them what had happened. They came to know. Then when they asked me that question, I said, all right, will you tell me one thing? What sort of love you all had for him? Why he would use that for us, that if we were to love him as the women love? I said, what? Did he tell you that? I said, yeah, now and again he would bring up such things. So he said he would tell us the same thing.
The other way around?
Yeah. So this is how he acts, you see. Fills in his ministry, I guess, to get somebody closer and closer. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah. These are the things to win his beings, win his own, closer to him. Get us back to him. We have gone away from him, get us back to him. Really speaking, it's we who have withdrawn from him, really speaking.
Without having much of physical input. Without having much of physical injury, except for a hurt knee, I was all right. But I suffered terribly within me, seeing Baba suffering, Mara suffering, finding that I hadn't a share in it. But then Baba needed me for other things. And yet one day when I went into Baba's room, we were always happy to go into Baba's room, not only because of Baba, but also because it was air-conditioned and it was terribly hot. In fact, if Baba sent one of us out with a message, we always thought we didn't understand the message properly. So when he opened the door and felt that blast coming in, we closed it and said, Baba, you mean I have to do one? Yes, said Baba, I told you. Yes, Baba. Go and open the door. She should come or something. This would go on. So one day when I was there with Baba, and usually we never saw the men never saw us. But Baba called Dr. Donkin. Why? Because he looked at me and said, I'm afraid. So what's the matter with you? Cheeks are gaunt, and this black circles under your eyes. What's the matter with you? Don't you sleep or anything? And, of course, the moment I said, the others turned and stare at me, you're a museum piece suddenly enough. And I said, I don't know. This won't do, said Baba. So he asked, go ahead to go and call Arana, to go and call Donkin, Dr. Donkin. Don, as we call him. So Don came in. Of course, he didn't look at me. I wouldn't look at him. So he was looking at Baba. And Baba said, what are you standing there for like that? Look at her. And he looks at me. Well, I said, Baba, did you see how gaunt she is and those black circles, around her eye, that circle under her eye? Do something about it. Write her a nice, give her a nice tonic to make her strong. And some pills, to make her bloom. No reply. What's the matter? Can you hear me? I heard you, Baba. Well, do it. So Baba, no amount of tonic or tablets, pills, are going to do help her at all. What she needs is rest and change. Baba looked at her. He looked at the others and said, he's mad. I always said so. He's a barber. Baba always, for a doctor, a surgeon, Baba's gesture was of the barber shaving. There were the barbers. There was the Indian barber and there was the English barber. That was none and that was no company. What's the matter? I said, Baba said, to give her some tonic and some pills to make her strong. And you talk of irrelevant things like rest and change. And go on. All right, I'll write down the tonic. Now, he did. Now, that meant more of a responsibility for me. It didn't help me at all because Baba said, I must have the pills 10 minutes before breakfast and I must have the tonic 20 minutes after lunch. Or at such and such a time, Now, those are orders. It didn't matter how small or insignificant an order seemed to be when Baba gave it. It had just the same importance as anything. Baba would catch you up like that. And we were used to it. All the little orders that fitted our day, like the thing to put the pigeonhole, and all, a lot of things in my head due to that. And all the time, that was more of Baba's meditation. Oh, my God, I don't know if breakfast will be in 10 minutes. Supposing I take the tablet now and breakfast isn't ready in 10 minutes. Is 10 minutes after I had my... Baba's at 10 o'clock. So you see, there's no retiring. It's only retiring and more bundles are put on that retired man till you can just juggle along. Actually, as it's Christmas, I'll end with another little joke. A fun story, I should say. the children were at the Sunday school, and the Sunday school teacher asked one of the children, which parable do you like best? And immediately voices came, we like best the one about the multitude that loaves and fishes. This is fun. The loaves and fishes were given to the multitude, but there's two meanings. When you loaf, means you don't do work. When you fish, you have a holiday fishing. So the children, so we love the one about the multitude that loaves and fishes. But if I'm to continue here, you'll have to ask me questions because I'm been playing. Well, I'll tell a little, because this is a Baba story, is it? This is a joke that was told to Baba. But as I say, when Baba asks you to tell a joke, it's no laughing matter, believe me. Because when he asks you, you're blank. You can't think of a joke, you can't think of anything. So there used to be, when at the time in Mehrazan, there was Norina, Elizabeth, Kitty, Delia, Jean Adriel, and of course Rano and Kitty, they were with us. But Norina, Elizabeth, Delia, and Jean Adriel are involved in this story. We used to sit before Baba in the little sitting room up there, in Mara's cottage there, the women's cottage. And Baba would sit on the gadi that you see there, and we would sit around. And there we were, and Baba suddenly said to Norina, tell a joke. Now, Norina has such wit, such a sharp intellect, such charm. She could charm a stone where Baba's work was concerned. We've seen that again and again. So Norina had a bit of difficulty trying to think of a joke, and Delia said, oh, she was blank, you know. And anyway, they came up somehow. They pulled a joke out of their consciousness and said it to Baba. But they thought, Baba's doing that every day. This is an emergency. They sent a telegram to the state asking for a joke book so they could read some of the jokes and tell to Baba. So what came immediately by airmail was a big book called A Joke Dictionary. And there was A, B, C, D, E, A for, like when it came to T, it was for tramps and teachers. When it came to C, it was like children and so on. So they were very good. The four of them divided the joke dictionary into sections. Norina had it, Delia had it from A to F, and somebody else had a G to L, you know, alphabet-wise, they divided into four parts, and they were very good. They stuck to their own part. They didn't peek into the other sections of anybody else, and they would memorize three or four jokes, and in the evening when we would sit, they would tell the jokes. Now, one day what happened, this is going on fine, and poor Norina must have had the children's section, because it was often about the teacher and the children. And usually the bright child of her section was Tommy. So always the teacher would ask Tommy something, and Tommy always came up with the right answer. And Norina, like me, she would even change her voice. And when it was Tommy, he was always talking like this, you see. And the teacher was asking Tommy and Tommy. So that was fine. Now one day what happened was, the Delia wasn't well. She had a bad cold. And when you have a bad cold, you don't sit around Baba and the others. He was particular about that. And also because Baba was concerned about that person's health. And Baba said, Delia, you shouldn't be coming over to that cottage till your cold is well. 3 days, 4 days, and then you'll be fine. And then Baba asked her what medicine she'd have and the food and everything. But she had to stay in her room in the lower little cottage. So for 4 days, Delia wasn't there. And then when she came, that was all right. So, now, there are again four of them. Now, it's Delia's turn to tell a joke. So, Delia started telling a very nice joke to Baba. And Baba made a face. I've heard that before. Oh, Baba, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. I'll tell you another one, Baba. So, she told another one. Then she told him a second joke. Baba looked at all of us and said, what's the matter with her? Crazy. I've heard that one too.
I can't understand it, Barbara. I am sure I have. Oh, of course, if you say so, Barbara. I'll tell you another one. She said a third joke. And Barbara said, this is it. I give up. I've heard that one, too. Now, while Barbara's saying this, Barbara has one eye on Norina. None of us realize it. And Norina seemed to be suddenly very uncomfortable in her chair. And she was going deeper and deeper into the back of the chair. And Barbara said to Norina, what's the matter, Norina? Chair not comfortable? It's quite comfortable, Barbara. Oh. And then, of course, Norina blushed and said, oh, Barbara, I'm sorry, but I told you that joke yesterday from Delia's section. Delia was so shocked. And but Barbara said, sir, you swipe. You stole Delia's joke, huh? Well, Barbara, Norina was trying to be charming. And Barbara said, why did you do it, Norina? And Norina said, Barbara, darling, she said, I was so sick of Tommy. All the jokes of Tommy. So now, I'll tell you one joke of Tommy, which Erica's reminded me. And which Barbara enjoyed very much. Norina told this joke from that joke dictionary. The teacher was asking her class, the children, and she said, well, and can any of you tell me where God is? And Tommy, of course, put up his hand. Yes, Tommy? And Tommy said, he's in our bathroom at home. I said, Tommy, how can you say things like that? What makes you think God is in your bathroom at home? And he said, well, I hear Daddy goes up to the bathroom door every morning and shouts, oh, Lord, are you still in there? He doesn't ask. But it's when you're unprepared, you don't know, suddenly he'll turn around to you and say something. Even it may be something that you boast to yourself that you're so good at. But at that unexpected moment when Barbara flings an order at you, you go, bah, you're just really like hit with an arrow, and you just stunned. And I still remember Margaret Kraft, Barbara's disciple who'd been with us many years in the ashram, till Barbara sent her back to the States to teach dancing. So she's still doing that. That's because Margaret was wonderful at obeying Barbara's orders without question. You know, not, of course, nobody questions in the sense of why, but even in a simple way, even if something seemed insignificant or unreasonable, no, what is the word? Something that seemed not to make sense, still Margaret would do it. Like if Barbara said, pick up that stone, Margaret wouldn't wonder why. She'd just pick it up and give it to Barbara. So Barbara said, go to the space and keep dancing, and so she's still doing it. And she's over 90. And it's amazing when those Barbara lovers will still see her doing that. It's amazing, but we're not surprised. That is Margaret. So anyway, what had I started saying?
It was
Margaret. Oh, yes. So Margaret, we have read rave reviews about her in magazines and things. She's tough. She's in demand for teaching the Metropolitan Opera and all those things. You all know all that. But, so when she was here with us in Mehrazad, and suddenly Baba turned around to her and would say something like, how's your health? Or what's the time? And Margaret would just stare, you know, just blank, absolutely blank. And Baba would turn to us and said, look at her. She's so famous as a dancer. She can teach this, and she's so good at that, and she's got degrees of this, and she's all that. And yet, I asked her a simple question. How is your health? And she goes, Barbara's making a face like that. And Margaret would laugh and say, Barbara, I can't help it. When I'm seated before you, I go blank. And then Barbara says, good. That's as it should be when you are with me. not cluttered with any thought. Which reminds me to tell you a story about how I always say, when you come to Baba, leave your buffaloes behind you. Don't bring your buffaloes with you. Only come yourself to Baba. And the story about that is, when we were in Peradhan, I mean, most of the years of Baba's life on earth, the most time he has spent anywhere has been at Mehrazad, especially so after the accident, you know, because there has not been the traveling, the master tours were finished, and except for 3 months to Pune, Guru Prasad, it was not. But he kept on doing his work, even though with all the inconveniences and all the pain and all the way he broke up his body and for his work, his sacrifices, like that is why when sometimes his close disciples suffer, and they say, but, you know, why should they? But for his work, he would even sacrifice what his most loved one. Even like when he docked his body, when he retired physically from it, even that is a giving for the sake of his work. Because even that means so much sorrow for Mara, so much for us all. But he sacrificed that for his work. He comes for his work, and he does for his work. So, when we were married, huh? So, Baba wanted to do some work with a particular monk. Have the monk brought here, and be kept in Mehrazad, and he would work with the monk every day for a certain amount of time. And he wanted the Nilkanthwala monk, who was in Dehradun, whom Baba had worked with before. It's a beautiful story about why the mask was called Nilkanthwala. You must ask Eric as soon as I finish the story. And it would be a beautiful mask. So that mask was in Dehradun. Now, Amrit's father, Kumar, also, because the family lives in Dehradun, and he's the right person, the one. So Baba had telegrams sent, or letters sent to Kumar, that I want Nilkanthwala mask brought here, but you should not bring the mask unless you are quite free of your responsibilities. You have nothing that will hold you there, you know, your duties and responsibilities. Only if you're absolutely clear of that, then you should accompany the mask and bring him here. Otherwise, send the mask with somebody else. Yeah, because only one, you must come alone with the mask and nothing else. So poor Kumar was in a quandary. First of all, of course, 3 days the mask would not say yes. He kept on refusing. He kept on digressing. He looked away. No, no, no. The third day, he said yes. And he said, Kumar says, the mask got ready. He put on his suit and he put on his boot, which means that the mask who had nothing on put a towel around him, which was his suit, and his boots, everything, that was all. And he got up that majestic mien that they had, you know, that regal thing. I'm ready to come. And now Kumar was in a dither, what to do? He sent a telegram here that I'm bound by your conditions, which I cannot fulfill, but my mother, an old lady, about 80, but if the mother can accompany the master. And Baba said, okay, as long as... Now, they live on a farm. They're a very hard-working family. They have fields, they have cattle, buffaloes, cows, and things like that, especially buffaloes. So naturally, Mataji, which means mother, the old lady, Mataji was concerned that she is leaving now. So she said, just before popping, she said to her son, now, remember, this buffalo needs feeding twice, that's the, and the grain for this one is there, and this has to be done, these last-minute things. And she found her son looking at her very strangely and very peculiar expression on his face. And she said, what's the matter? Why don't you answer me? And he said, don't go, mother. Don't go. Baba said, come alone. And you're taking your buffaloes with you. You're thinking all the time of the buffaloes. And Baba said, leave everything and come alone. She suddenly realized. She says, no, I'm going. Take the buffaloes and throw them into the lake. Take the grain and you know, scatter them on the roof. I have nothing to do with it. I am going, and I'm going alone. I'm not taking my buffaloes or my home or my children with me. That means even in mine. So then she started out on a long journey from Dehradun to here. And a train journey in India, as some of you, or many of you, may have experienced, is a different experience than the ordinary kind of traveling you have in the West. So there was the mask, and they got into the... Of course, Kumar was at the station, seeing them comfortable. Two seats were reserved, and the Mataji used both the seats for the mask. So he could sit on one, and he could put his feet on the other and lie down like this. And she sat on the floor in the corridor between the seats. She sat in the aisle, and it was packed, the train, the compartment was packed with people. And now, one thing that the mask liked, which was of help, Kumar gave his mother a box of talcum powder. So Nirmala mask liked the talcum powder on his head. Now and then just sprinkle some on his head. That's your ammunition. If ever you feel that you're getting restless, do that and everything will be all right. So even before anything happened, she thought she better be on the safe side. So now and then she'd get up from the floor, sprinkle a few sprays of talcum powder on his head. And these other people are watching. They don't know about the mask, and they say, ah, there's a lady. That's her son. And she's trying to use him to extract money from people and making him look like a sannyasi or a sadhu or something all that wise. So little by little they start to say, hey, you, sir, tell your son to put on his leg. He's taking another seat. Look at the way we're sitting cramped. This lady, now she had a lot of spice, a lot of chili in her. And she said to them, she said, look, where his feet are is where my bottom should be. That's my seat. You have nothing to do with it. I'm not taking, he's not putting his feet on your seat, that's my seat, I paid for it. You keep quiet. So after a while, and then they said, she said, look, what is this? He's very scantily clad. And if the towel moved a little, it would be very indecent. And she said, why don't you worry about covering up your own part? Instead of bothering, you know, why are you so upset about, you know, you if you minded your own business, and I'm sure there's much to mind. So then they keep quiet again. Then they say, they tell each other loudly, that old lady's putting, you know, all this babuka on the head and all, just for the money. So she was fuming. She was just waiting for them to say something to her. In the meantime, the station came, and she would take oranges every now and then. Would he like some oranges or not? No. But at one station, he got down. He got down for a bath. Now, the platform has those big taps. You know, we have those faucets where we see from the window people taking bath on the platform under the tap. So, the poor dear, she didn't know whether the train would go away. Is there enough time? But you can't do much with a mouse. She would just follow it, just followed him. And whenever he would walk fast, but he didn't seem to walk fast, he would take a few strides and he would be covering so many steps, and the poor little old lady would be running up and jogging with so many little steps, saying, oh, Mr. Mask, wait for me. And he was just, without turning around, he stopped, till she made up. And again, a few strides, and again, he sat under the tap, and so Mataji thought, I better help him to bathe, so it can be done quickly, one eye on the train. The train would be leaving. You don't stop a train. So she started helping him, and amazingly, she said, two utter strangers from the platform came over and started scrubbing his back and helping Mataji bathe the mask. So that she, then, and anyway, her heart was in her mouth. But when he finished, he took his time very slowly, and then he walked into the moment they stepped into the compartment, the train started to move. Baba's great. Baba has done it. Achha, so when they came, Baba wanted him at Satara. Baba wanted the mask. Baba wanted the mask at Satara. The mask had been to Mirazad, had stayed in Mirazad for a number of days. But the story that I'm telling you now is concerned when Baba was in Satara before the accident. So Baba wanted the mask there. Now, to get to Satara from Dehradun, they would... the train would be stopping at Bombay. They'd be at Bombay, then another train that takes you to Pune, and then a bus that takes you from Pune to Satara. But no problem. Baba had deputed Baidu, the mask hunter, and Alaba, you know, always ready for anything, ever ready, to go and meet Mataji and the Nilkanthwala mask. So no problem. All she had to do was just travel in the train, but Kumar had seen that she was comfortable. They started, and when they got down at Bombay, there was Mataji and the mask, no Baidu, no Alaba, and she was frantic. So she went along and telling the mask to help her, Mr. Mask, please wait, or come with me, or just... And, no. Now, you see, in India, I suppose in the West too, these platforms are so terribly long. So she had to go from one end of the platform to the other, looking, or doing something. You know, she can't just stand, but trying to suddenly come across Baidul and Alaba. So there again on that long platform, the mask striding a few long steps, and Mataji going, you know, looking at one, wait for me, Mr. Mask, wait for me. And it suddenly stand, you know, like a king among all these. Until she made up, and then again a few steps. But no Baidu and no Alaba. So there were taxis at the end. So they looked into each of the taxis. No, there wasn't. Now what to do? Then she asked somebody about the train to Pune, and they said, look, at the opposite platform they were on, is the train, and it's leaving for Pune in 5 minutes. So she thought, whatever happens, I better get on a train. Somehow she managed. She and the mask got on that train. They get to Pune. If I perhaps in Pune we find me. No. So then she doesn't know the right bus. Anyhow, somehow it all happened. They got on the bus, and the bus came to Satara. Now she doesn't know where Baba's living. She doesn't know, she doesn't have the address of the house Baba's in. She doesn't know any of these things. So she starts walking out. Fortunately, in Satara, the roads are so late that it's, even when we go for walks with Baba, long time walks with Baba, it will take half an hour, one and a half hour to be walking with Baba. No matter where you went, you always came across the road that leads home. You know, it's a sort of a family pattern of roads there. So she walked and walked, and the master would walk and she would walk. At last, they came to a crossroad. That means there was a road leading to the right, and there's a road leading to the left. Now, which is she to take? These are absolutely opposite to each other, the direction, right or left. So she was wondering what to do now, after having walked quite a while, what to do now. And the master standing beside her, quite unconcerned. And so she says to herself, should we take the right? Should we go to the right, to the left? Suddenly, the master's arm shuts out, pointing to the left. Oh! So she decides to take the left. They go a few feet, and there's Baba standing outside the house, awaiting them.
It was taking her on the trip.
And then Mataji was sent to the women's quarters, where she was so happy to be given this privilege to do something for Baba. And she made that long journey, amazing person, anywhere she was. So when she came to where Mara and we girls were, this old lady, after a long, tiring journey, she, who really should have had an escort, escorting a mask of all these things, it's no joke, and all tired and bedraggled, she comes in with her sari over her head, pretending to be a bridegroom, you know, like she'd come, and we just couldn't believe it. But the story of the master himself, and why Baidul and Alaba couldn't... Baba teased Baidul and Alaba a lot. First, not only teased, he really gave it to me. And they said, but we didn't see them. And Baba said, you didn't see? How is it possible to miss a mask like Nilkanthwala mask? But they said, we looked. Ah, said Baba, no, because the Shah of Iran had come to Bombay at that time. Yeah. And Baba said, you see, you two Iranis were so distracted by the Shah's arrival, and you probably had an eye out of whether you could see the Shah or go someplace. Probably you've been somewhere to see the Shah, and you went, no, Baba, we never would do that, and this went on and on.
Had we?
Well, that had happened. I mean, the Shah's visit coincided with the mosque, and these two Iranis sent by Baba to go to Bombay.
But did they ever go to try and look
for the Shah? Did they ever? They never admitted
no.
it.
No.
Well, I think they did. They did.
Baba took...
Yeah. Right, when we are confident of taking care of them, then Baba is the So when you're coming for Baba, and you really leave it to him.
You are translated into Gujarati for those
students. Room for anything else. There was no room for questions. I'm told by so many of the others I've only heard, but those who would come with questions, and questions written, a long list of questions, and put in their pocket, and yet when they were leaving, they didn't ask. And when somebody reminded them, what happened? You were going to ask those questions. Here was your chance. Why did you miss it? He said, there are no questions. He answered them all. They were all answered. He's one, but we didn't. But I'll tell you something. He referred to Jesus in ways. For instance, I had one question, but as far as direct of Jesus was concerned, he would say, Jesus was crucified once. As Jesus, I was crucified once. But as Mer Baba, I'm crucified daily. This was his gesture for crucifixion. So that suffering in silence, we can have no... But I asked one thing. I used to be very, very sad and hurt about Peter. That's what I mean by something I said a few moments ago about how he has to sacrifice even his most loved ones for his work. And I said, why? Why should Peter be given the role of denying his Lord, the one who loved him above everything, the one who served him like that? And that always remains with me. I have not so much conversed with the whole of the thing, but Peter's always seemed very important to me. So one day I asked Baba, I said, Baba, why did you let that happen to Peter? After he loved you. Look at his love for you. And Baba looked so loving. He said, I know. But it was for my work. Had Peter not denied me, he would not have had the repentance, the remorse, which was the force, the steam that drove him to do my work, but he did. Had that, he worked to the measure of his repentance. And had that not been there, my work would not have been done to that extent as I wanted it. He said, you don't know how much I love Peter. Baba tells me, you don't know. But I had to for my work. Then I understood, not only about Peter, but about a lot of other things. About Buddha, as I was saying the other day, somebody asked me, what did Baba say about Buddha? And I again looked blank and said, I don't know. He didn't say anything to us, maybe. You see, the men would have more of that because the ones who were allowed to come to Baba, and like philosophers or this or anybody, would have some questions. And Baba would be moved or the whim. He would even go out of his way to... say more than had been asked. And so the men were more witnesses to that than we women were. We weren't always there. So when they said, what does Baba say about Buddha? Because this lover, Baba lover, was very drawn to Baba as Buddha had been. So I said, I don't remember Baba saying anything about Buddha. And suddenly it came to me that only one sentence Baba had said about Buddha that I had heard, and which was so strong, so big, that when it came to me, it just filled the whole vacuum in my mind. And also I could say it was about one of the practically nil experiences that I'd ever had. I mean, we hear about experiences, we hear about so much vision, and we've had none of that, at least I haven't. But this time I could actually say that, but I didn't know it. I didn't recognize it at the time. I didn't give importance at the time, because Baba never gave importance to experiences and visions. And no, the whole importance to love me. Isn't that enough of a job for a heart and a person, a human being, for a whole life, a lifetime? Love. That's what Baba wants. The other thing we want. We are curious about this. We want satisfaction out of that. As I always say, don't love Baba as a rich uncle for what he has. Love him for what he is, not for the other. So here was about Buddha, and it suddenly came to me that we had gone to Ellora Caves with Baba on one visit. And there were many women at that time, because it was the Blue Bus Tour, during the Blue Bus Tour. And when we went sightseeing, because we were so many, I still remember, even when we went into the Taj Mahal, where somebody said, oh, look at this, when you turned around, you saw another place. You turned this way, there was another place. You really couldn't get through the faces in order to see what it was. So you only saw it in sketchy manner. So here we were in this cave, which is called the Buddha Cave, in the Ellora cave that we visited with Baba. And I can, and looking back, I can say that we were practically in the very center of that big cave, Buddha's cave, and we were all around there, and Baba, who carried his alphabet board under his arm usually, and I'd been nearby in case Baba wanted to speak, that means speak by the alphabet board, and I would read out. So suddenly I saw Baba pull out the alphabet board, and his fingers spelt out just three words, I am Buddha. And as he pointed that out, I was saying it. It was my voice. Baba was saying it, and my voice said, I am Buddha. And when just my voice said that, I felt as if there was nobody in that cave. Absolutely empty. Nobody. Neither myself, nor any of my companions, nor Baba, nothing. Just those three words existed in that cave. And it kept reverberating. I am Buddha. I am Buddha. I am Buddha. I am Buddha. It was like one big sound. I don't know how it was there. Baba would always say, when he said something and the clock struck, it was true. At the end of that, he was back, like a switch had been turned off again. We were all together, and Baba was walking. We were trying to follow him, keeping up with him to reach the board. Sometimes now I wish I had asked Baba some questions. You know, I'm stumped when some of the young ones want to know something. And of course, they know that I don't know, and I say that I don't know, but it would be nice sometimes too.
Funny, Baba said he dropped his, he used to drop his body in Kashmir.
That's all I've heard. Baba's hair is like that. The card, I'm told that when the Vishantas children, they said, oh, that's Jesus. And once a Baba lover told us the story, an American Baba lover family, and it was Christmas time, and the mother had gone out shopping for Christmas. You know, they had to feed the Santa Claus to bring the presents to the children. So the shopping was going on, and it was a very busy time. The mothers were harassed for time, so much had to be done, and they were all trying to get the gifts at the shop. So that the little children that were there, they can't look above the counter. These two children were knee high among that crowd, and so one of the people at the store, this woman was a Baba lover, and when she opened her purse to get out the money to pay at the counter, something fluttered and fell out of her purse onto the ground. Immediately, the two little ones saw something falling, and they squatted on the ground. Here, amidst the sea of legs of everybody, sat on the ground, one of them picked up this thing. And the other said, what's that? And she said, look, this is God. And it was a picture of Baba, a card. So while they were looking for Christmas higher up, two little children found God. Way down the ground level. I love that story. I think it's really Christmas. A Merry Christmas to you all, Jay Baba.
Because it was infested with wild and elephants. But Baba wanted to contact this one who is